for their college education because of that. Your sister may stop speaking to you because you won't pay her rent anymore, but it may be time for you to stop making her rent more of a priority than securing your own financial future. Maybe someone you considered a friend will kick you to the curb because you stop hanging out so much with the fellas to be with your girlfriend. Prioritize your relationships and you will discover who your real friends are. You will always find excuses to wait. Your decision to prioritize destiny will always make someone angry. But better that person be angry with you than for you to be angry with you. I guarantee you will end up an angry person the day you awaken spiritually and realize that you've adhered to everyone's priorities except your own. Your chief priority is an appointment with destiny. Chapter 4. Destiny is spelled P-R-I-O-R-I-T-I-Z-E. Get your relationships, money, and thoughts in step with your destiny. When you understand the steps needed to take you to the next level, the only way you can feel content about your life is if you are living according to the priorities you have set. Other people may not understand your choices or your lifestyle and may even ridicule you for them. But when you know why you are making certain choices, their criticism doesn't matter. The haters don't matter. Your happiness will come from setting the priorities you need for the vision you have locked into. That doesn't mean you won't have frustrating moments. That doesn't mean you won't want to give up sometimes. It means that when your life is prioritized in a way that makes sense for you to reach destiny, you experience definite satisfaction and true contentment. While other people are seeking satisfaction through things or people or social standing, you have an opportunity for true joy and contentment by having your priorities in order. Your priorities are right when you make choices that lead you toward destiny. So what if your cell phone still flips open and doesn't have a touchscreen? So what if date night consists of a frozen pizza and a $2 DVD from a vending machine? So what if the bottoms of your shoes are not red and you don't have a handbag with someone's name on it? So what if you don't wear a suit and tie to work? So what if you pass up a date to stay home to help your child with his algebra? So what if you pull away from visionless people who have no plan for their future and don't want you to have any either? When you make decisions about what is best for you based on your priorities, you are much less likely to be concerned about critical commentary from people who have nothing to do with your destiny. Prioritize your relationships. I spoke in Ghana to a group of CEOs, politicians, and faith leaders about the importance of relationships. Anyone who understands business knows that the ability to build and maintain relationships with clients, customers, staff, and other companies is a prerequisite for successful business. If you can't build relationships, you are being torn down. Building relationships takes time that people often aren't willing to devote, partly because time is a limited resource for us all. Most of us have, at one time or another, spent a lot of energy, time, and effort investing in relationships that show little return. I don't necessarily mean financial return. I mean advancement, growth, or alignment with your vision. I'd rather you waste my money than waste my time. I earnestly believe that you must quantify the time you spend in relationships that may not be disruptive, but yet may be counterproductive to what you are trying to accomplish. It's not enough to invest money into your destiny if you waste time. The true barometer to help you evaluate the relationships to invest in must center on this significant question: how does this person fit into my destiny and purpose? If you would approach your time with the same sense of fiduciary duty as your money, you would see a far greater return. People who are truly engaged want to know, where do I fit in your life and destiny? Until that question can be answered, good people will leave you because they can't live in the clutter of your indecisiveness. To maximize the years you have left, clear the clutter. Priorities can require us to find new friends and associates. Be selective and determine your associations carefully. Prioritize the persons with whom you will spend time and know why they are in your life. Your old buddy from junior high may not be the best person for you to associate with. You may be from the hood and try to prove that you have not forgotten where you came from. Old acquaintances may even accuse you of forgetting where you came from. Staying in touch with the old gang from the hood is not a requirement for destiny, and you don't have to prove yourself to anyone. Sometimes you simply have to break away from unhealthy people and relationships. When ex-offenders are placed on parole or probation, very often there are stipulations regarding persons they may spend time with to reduce the likelihood of a repeat offense. The first thing to do in deciding what stays in your life and what goes is to determine what nourishes you and strengthens you. While it is nice to be philanthropic, many are trying to help while they are not capable of standing strong themselves. If you've been off track and lost time, missed moments, and had failures and delays, before you can help from your heart, you have to stabilize your head. Making decisions that invest before you make decisions that withdraw is critical for survival, whether in finances or relationships or time management. Ultimately, we want to be successful so that we can make a difference in the lives of others. But before you can be successful, you have to be a survivor. To move from survival to success, we must begin by investing in what invests in us. Pour into relationships that pour into you. I know that sounds like common sense, but it is not that common. You've got to have somebody who can feed you so you can feed someone else. Many people feed others who can't feed them, while they completely fail to nourish those who really desire to feed them. When Deuteronomy 25:4 says, "Don't muzzle the mouth of the ox that treads the grain," it simply means feed what is feeding you. If you're feeding people who can't feed you, it's only a matter of time before that constant feeding will begin to drain you. Don't keep feeding the same people for years and years. Be intentional about the people you are connected to. If you are to live as a child of destiny, you will interact with three basic types of people. The first and most important type of person you will encounter is a confidant. You will have very few of them in your lifetime. In fact, if you have two or three in your entire lifetime, you are tremendously blessed. Confidants are the people who love you unconditionally. They are into you. They have your back, whether you're up or down. They are with you for the long haul. If you get in trouble, they won't abandon you. Confidants will come get you out of jail. They'll pull you out of a drug house and love you all the while. You need a good confidant in order to reach destiny. Confidants are for you and with you and intimately intertwined in your life. They are with you to make sure you reach destiny. They will challenge you and confront you to stay on the path to destiny. They will get all in your business and in your face if they think you are out of order. They are not afraid to tell you when you're wrong and affirm you when you are right. Without them, you'll never be who God called you to be. The next type of person you will encounter is constituents. You will likely have many of them in your lifetime. Constituents are not into you, rather they are into what you are for. They are not for you, nor does your destiny matter to them. But as long as you are for what they are for, they will walk with you and work with you, but it ends there. Never think that they are on your team to stay for the long haul. Constituents are not confidants. Understand the nature of constituents, because these are the people who will walk away if they meet someone else who will further their agenda. Constituents are always looking for a better deal. They will walk away from you to hook up with another person who better serves their purpose or their need. But if you understand who constituents are and their role and purpose in your life, you won't be too sad when they walk away. They were never in your life for you. They were in your life because they perceived that you and they were for the same thing. They were with you as long as you were for what they were for. Throughout your life, it's essential not to get caught up in the hype of constituency. Any politician can tell you that. Have you ever seen a popular politician fall from the grace of his or her constituents? It's amazing to watch as the transgressions of a beloved political figure comes to light. Suddenly and swiftly, those who once were supporters begin to back away. Take care not to mistake your constituents for your confidants, particularly at times when you are broken. Constituents will fool you because after you've fallen in love with them, they will break your heart as they abandon you to connect with someone else who is for what they are for. The last group you will encounter is comrades. They are not for you, nor are they for what you are for. They are against what you are against. Comrades make strange bedfellows. They will team up with you not so you can reach your destiny, but to fight a common enemy. Don't be fooled or confused by the close connection. They will only be with you until the victory happens. Comrades are like scaffolding. They come into your life to fulfill a purpose. They give you support for a time, but that time will only last as long as the common enemy lasts. When the purpose is complete, the scaffolding is removed. But don't be upset when the scaffolding is taken away, because the building is still standing. Prioritize your associations with confidants, constituents, and comrades. Expect the constituents and the comrades to leave you after a while. And please don't be upset when they don't react to your dream the way you expected them to, because they were never for you or with you in the first place. By now you may be thinking that it would simply be easier to avoid both constituents and comrades alike, but that's not how the world operates. The only thing you need to do is be careful and prioritize your relationships, knowing the position and role people play in your life. For instance, be careful who you tell your dream to, because if you tell your dream to your constituents, they will desert you and try to fulfill the dream without you. If you tell your comrades, they won't support you because they were never for what you were for anyway. Seek the people in your life who are safe to share your dream with, and if you find just a few during your lifetime, you are indeed blessed. If you are dating a young lady who berates you for not having the material things you've delayed purchasing to fulfill your dream, she may be just a constituent. If your neighbor has never treated you kindly but comes to you because he wants your help to defeat an amendment that will negatively affect your neighborhood, don't get too excited. He's probably just a comrade. When the bill gets defeated after the election, he will go right back to ignoring you. You can separate your comrades and your constituents from someone who has the potential to be a confidant with a simple test. If someone is really with you, they will weep when you weep, and they will rejoice when you rejoice. If you share some good news with someone and they don't rejoice with you, stop telling them your business. Try it sometime. If you walk into a room and tell someone about good things that are happening to you, stop celebrating long enough to watch their reaction. If they are not happy for you, shut your mouth, turn around, and walk back out the door. Share your dreams with people who want you to succeed. Prioritize your finances. The journey to destiny includes every part of your life, especially your finances. Financial advisors will tell you they can look at your bank statement and know where your priorities lie. What does your bank account say about you? Do you look like $1 million with only a few dollars in the bank and nothing saved for retirement? Are you barely making minimum payments on your credit cards? Are all of your credit cards at their maximum balance? Financial advisors have a saying that if you are sitting on your assets, your priorities are all wrong. In other words, if all of your discretionary income is spent on expensive clothes or cars or handbags and you have no money saved for a rainy day or retirement, your priorities are misplaced. Prioritize your spending so that all of your money is not blown on things that depreciate. Think about the mobile phone you have. If you have one of the latest smartphones, you probably paid a premium price for it. How much is it worth now? Technology changes quickly, so the phone you paid $350 for a year ago is only worth $150 now. Look at how you spend your money. Are you obsessed with the latest electronic gadgets? Can you drive a car for years after it's paid for? Can you wear clothes that don't come from certain stores? There's nothing wrong with shopping for quality, but the clothes you wear and the car you drive can never make you great. Destiny has nothing to do with impressing other people with the things you own. You don't need an image that you created in order to reach destiny. You are created in the image of God, and that's the only image that matters. Many people choose to invest their time in looking like they've made it, rather than investing time in the things that will help them achieve genuine success. They invest in depreciating assets so that they can keep up with the Joneses, only to find their houses repossessed. Is it more important to have the latest luxury car or to send your children to college? Prioritize your spending so you can be free to travel the road of destiny. You can't be free to pursue destiny if you're a slave to debt and spending. Choosing to live your dream may mean quitting your job to pursue your calling, but if you're up to your ears in debt, you can't walk away from that job. If you owe everybody in town, you'll never save enough money to buy the dream home you want. Your dream may be to send your children to a private school to broaden their opportunities, but you probably can't afford it if you're spending money on the latest style of athletic shoes or expensive kids' birthday parties that your children may not even remember. Prioritize how your money is spent and be a good steward of the financial blessings you have already received, no matter how meager. Show God you can be trusted with the small amount given you, and the Almighty Provider will give you more. If you're wasteful with small sums of money, you'll be wasteful with large sums too. Prioritize what's important for you to fulfill your dream. It's miserable living someone else's life, and it is downright suffocating to live beneath your potential. There is no reward in achieving someone else's plan for your life, yet people will constantly try to suck you into their agenda. Other people always have an opinion about what you should do with your life. Your mother may think you should teach school because that's a vocation that represents a steady paycheck. Your father may nag you about going to medical school because you earn good grades in science. Your best friend thinks you should open a daycare because you're good with children. Your grandmother tells you to start a newspaper because you're a good writer. All of those vocations are great, and the service they'll give to humanity is quite valuable. The problem is that if the vocation is not reflective of your destiny, it's simply no good. Believe it or not, some have never been allowed to prioritize their own lives. There's a son who longs to sculpt, but because his parents are both PhDs, they use parental pressure to steer him to a vocation that is more palatable to them. There's a daughter who loves cars and dreams of being a master mechanic, but her boyfriend has discouraged her because he doesn't think it's suitable work for a woman. Set your priorities for destiny and forget about what other people want for you, no matter how well-meaning their intentions. Only you can have the vision for your life, so only you can determine what's most important to getting there. Other people may not understand or respect the sacrifices you choose to make on your way to destiny, but don't ever let that stop you. Your choices won't make sense to anyone else because they can't see what you can see. They don't know where you're going. Sometimes your choices won't even make sense to the people you love most. But those who truly love you will respect your priorities even if they don't understand them. Your priorities confirm where you're headed because everything you do will be in support of your destination. A person who has priorities will drive an older or a cheaper car, will forego designer label clothing, and will pass up the latest model of an electronic device if she has a dream that requires keeping tight control on her finances. When a young man's priorities are in place, he will skip going to shoot some hoops with his buddies in order to spend an extra hour on a school project. A woman will pass on that vacation with the girls because her fiancé wants her to go to his family reunion. A man will stay on the job that will give him the training he needs for a sustainable future rather than to take a higher-paying dead-end job. A couple will opt for a less expensive wedding in order to have more money for a substantial down payment on their new home. People who are living life on purpose have priorities and tend to get more out of life. They are happier, even in difficult times, because they have a reason to exist. They know why they've made certain choices, so they don't feel like victims for living a less than impressive lifestyle. They live in pursuit of destiny rather than in pursuit of other people's approval. Cultivate a great mind and leave behind small thinking. If you don't prioritize your life and the things that are important to you, you'll get off focus and start investing your energy in trivial matters like who lied to you, who's gossiping about you, or who's gossiping about someone else. America's former First Lady, Eleanor Roosevelt, observed that great minds discuss ideas, average minds discuss events, small minds discuss people. You are the one who determines your thoughts. You are the one who determines the issues that are worthy of your time. You have the power to push aside pettiness in pursuit of greatness. Your destiny is greatness. Pettiness and greatness cannot occupy the same space. Don't block destiny opportunities from manifesting in your life because you're prioritizing minor issues. If your aunt and your cousin are fighting again, let them work out their own problems because destiny is calling you. If your neighbor refuses to abide by the rules of your homeowners association, let it go. Destiny is calling you. If your sourpuss employee does a good job, let it go. As long as she's not dealing with the public, the fact that she doesn't have a bubbly personality is a minor issue. If someone you were depending on backs out of a business deal, don't spend a lot of time figuring out why. That's minor. You need to be looking for a new partner. That's major. Greatness runs deep, but pettiness runs shallow and wide. Petty thinking is a fast-moving carcinogen that will spread itself over the greatness in you and eat away at your potential for growth. Stop allowing minor thoughts to occupy your mind. They're not paying rent to reside there. Reserve your strength for the difficult matters of arriving at destiny. There's some stuff you just leave alone. You don't fix every problem that comes across your radar. You don't try to straighten out every dispute that comes before you. Don't chase down every rumor. If people are gossiping about you, let them talk, because the people who are talking negatively about you don't matter. It is dangerous to let minor matters become priorities, because when major things happen, you won't have the strength and fortitude needed to deal with what's important. Save your strength and don't toss and turn at night over minor issues. Don't dredge up negative experiences and expend mental energy ruminating over them. Don't worry about why that person didn't speak to you, why they lied to you, why they didn't invite you to their event. Reserve your energy for your highest and best use. If you are ever to connect with destiny, you must develop the art of handling minor issues appropriately. Many things happen at the Potter's house that I never even know about. My staff knows not to tell me because they know I'll get involved in it and try to figure out a solution. I'm glad I have a capable staff that can handle the day-to-day issues that crop up. They know that my time is limited and I can't afford to get distracted by minor problems. But that means something else, too. We hire smart people at the Potter's house. I can't hire limited thinkers. I can't hire mediocre people who I'm smarter than so they can make me feel superior. No, I have to hire people who are smarter than me at what they do so I can walk away knowing those people can be trusted to do the job. I've known managers, CEOs, and company owners who get intimidated by people who are smarter than they are. They hire people of mediocre or average capability so they will always feel like they're on top. Hiring smart people makes me feel like I'm on top because I can focus on the tasks that are uniquely mine to accomplish. I don't have to worry about having enough toner for the copy machine or what time the bank deposits got there. I have prioritized and determined that my time is best spent on my destiny, not on keeping track of what everyone else is doing. Destiny's diminutive beginnings. When your priorities are set toward destiny, you are aware of where you are and where you are trying to go. And because you are aware, you are prepared to seize opportunities as they arise. You won't be so blinded by the big picture that you can't see the smaller scenarios along the way. Pay attention to the small things because sometimes the greatest opportunities can come through seemingly insignificant events. Sometimes the daily bus ride to work introduces you to your spouse. Sometimes a volunteer position in an organization connects you to the CEO of the company that you've been longing to work for. The Bible encourages us not to despise small beginnings. They often lead to greatness. Greatness has to marinate. The age of television and movies can give the impression that fame is captured and notoriety is gained in an hour of programming or a few weeks of reality show. And yes, many people have become well-known fairly quickly because of reality television shows, but there's still no such thing as an overnight success. Every person who attained significance in his or her field of endeavor had to pay some dues to get there. Working low-paying jobs, working for free as an intern or volunteer, or giving faithful service on a job even while the boss takes the credit. God has ordered our existence to operate like a farmer planting seed in a field. If you pray and ask God for an oak tree, the Almighty might send you an acorn, because big things can come from small beginnings. God's answers may not look like your requests. So when you get an acorn but you were expecting a tree, don't throw the acorn away. Your tree is in the seed. God works through the agricultural principle of planting a seed and reaping a harvest. Your something small can become something mighty if you are a good steward of the seed. Flexibility keeps you from breaking. Some people have no problem prioritizing and setting their affairs in order. If anything, they're too good at putting things in order. They must live in such a way that everything is in its place and nothing is out of order. We all experience moments when everything is perfectly ordered, but life is just not like that all the time. Things change. Life changes. You change. Your life cannot remain static. You are a living, breathing organism, and in order to get where God wants you to be, you can't stay where you are. Order is essential, but life is full of changes. Sometimes life does not always fit a certain order. People come and go in your life. One minute you have a job, and the next minute you've been laid off. One day everybody is doing fine, and the next day someone in the family is diagnosed with a terminal illness. Life is full of change. A man can be on a great career path, great salary, regular raises, promotions, and recognitions. He can be a rising star until something happens. The company folds or downsizes. A new CEO comes in and there's a personality clash. It's change, and you have to adapt. People respond differently to challenging times. It's always a jolt when life sends us a tumble and fall moment. But what do you do when you get knocked down? A person whose priorities are set doesn't let one knockdown keep her from destiny. Instead, she dusts herself off and gets back on the journey, ever observant for subtle changes and signs that indicate destiny may be found in a totally different direction. Maya Angelou often talked about her grandmother, like I often talk about mine. She told how she admired her grandmother for carving a new path for her life when the road she was on got cut short. Annie Henderson's marriage failed in a time when people simply didn't divorce. She had two young children, one physically disabled, and she needed to earn a living. Annie wasn't educated but could read well enough and had a decent ability with numbers. Getting a job at one of the local mills was out of the question. She adapted herself to the prejudices with which a Negro woman in her day had to contend, and she found a way for herself and her family. She began selling fresh hot meat pies to the men working at the mills. She set up outside the mill and began frying as soon as the noon bell rang. Over the years, she built a loyal following and erected a stall nearby to sell her pies. In the years to come, her little stall evolved into a general store where she traded with black and white customers alike. Maya recalled that from her grandmother, she learned that when life sends us down an ominous road, we must look around and without embarrassment pick a new one. It's difficult to continue moving in faith toward destiny when life doesn't go the way you'd plan. One of the hardest things for people to do is to trust and believe God when in transition. You lose a loved one. The marriage you thought would last forever dies. It's devastating when you lose your job or lose a loved one or experience betrayal by someone you considered a good friend. After the initial shock of loss, a typical human response after a disruptive experience is to restore a sense of order. We quickly try to restore or replace what was lost. An unemployed person takes the first job offered, whether or not it's a career fit. A widowed person quickly remarries. Yet, there are times when emptiness is needed so that God can be allowed to fill the void. God cannot fill a vessel that is already full. God uses empty vessels. Trust God to fill the void created when things don't go as you plan. Human beings can find all kinds of ways to fill the void of loss, and many of them are not good. Substance abuse, compulsive shopping, compulsive spending, excessive eating, sexual promiscuity, and reckless choices are just a few of the unhealthy ways we can attempt to fill a void. God can use disorder to create a new order in your life. Sometimes disruptions actually serve to order your chaotic circumstances and take us to a new place. Like the mother eagle that stirs her nest to bring discomfort to her brood, God sometimes stirs up our lives. The shifts and setbacks you experience are not necessarily the work of your opposer. Sometimes a setback is a divine setup. Chaos on the outside actually may be God clearing out conditions, situations, or people that are in the way of your path to destiny. But it's hard to ride the wave when it seems like a life storm will overtake you. It's hard to trust that God is in control of your circumstances even during tumultuous times. It's easy to see what God was doing in your life once you get to the place God intended. The difficulty lies in seeing by faith what God is doing when you're on your way there. When you arrive at the place where God intended for you to be, you can say, "Okay, I see what was going on now." Nobody likes hard times, but it's the unpleasant experiences that are often the catalyst to build the character required for our destiny. Let go of your desire to control what you cannot know, change, or control. Let go of the past. Let go of your fear. Let go of your pain. The systems that work for you in the past will not work for you in the place where God is leading you. When you learn not to define yourself by where you were, you learn not to call the transitions in your life change. Instead, they're called normal, and you are a full participant in the movements of your life. Your normal should be constantly calibrating yourself and letting go of who you were to embrace who you are becoming. Determine that you will remain open to where you are being led and are willing to take responsibility for the transitions that lead you to destiny. Chapter 5. Focus. Decide what deserves you. Step toward what's worth your time and energy. You are not what you do. Arriving at destiny involves separating yourself from your gift. Many times people confuse who you are with what you do. Differentiating between who you are and what you do is critical for your well-being. As I've traveled in inner circles with highly visible people and gotten to know them personally, I have often found that an individual is totally different from what is broadcast on TV or in public forums. Your favorite comedian may not be nearly as jovial offstage as when the cameras are rolling. They are giving their gift and talent to the audience, but that is not an indication of who they are in their daily lives or how they may be feeling. In that same way, you can use your gift, but that doesn't mean you are the gift. Many are drawn to what you do, what you know, or some gift you have, and will be totally oblivious to the person you are. You don't have to be famous or on television to understand the distinction. Your gifts make room for you. If you're a very gifted person, people will seek you out. They will call upon you constantly to share your gifts for one purpose or another. There's a wonderful promise in the Bible in Proverbs 18:16 that says, "Your gifts will make room for you and propel you to higher places." It is a beautiful unfolding as your gift opens doors for you to run a corporation, play basketball, write, paint, remodel, practice medicine, teach, cook, or nurture whatever you are gifted to do. When you are really good at your gift and work to hone your skills, people will constantly request your services. Being sought after can make you feel loved and admired. It can make you feel worthy, but don't confuse the gift with you. People see me preach on television every week and feel they know me. One lady ran up to me one day while I was shopping and said, "I know who you are." "You do?" I asked. She smiled widely and replied, "You're the guy on Oprah." To someone else, I am the pastor of a megachurch. To others, I am a movie producer, a philanthropist, a businessman. I learned to be careful not to allow how others define me to become how I see myself. Myself and my service are not the same thing. They know Bishop T.D. Jakes. They don't know Thomas Dexter Jakes, the man. I don't get it twisted, and neither should you. Just because people love your gift doesn't mean they love you. Most of them will never really know you. Most of them don't care about you. They just want your gift. And it's okay to share your gift. It's a good thing to serve your gift to people or in places that may benefit from it. There may be occasions when both your service and yourself agree and you are fully invested in that arena. For example, I have invested myself in the Potter's House, not only my gift. That is the place to which God called me, and I'm all in. I have learned that I am most powerful and effective when I am fully invested. On the journey to destiny, be aware that you may share your gift and not share you. Make the distinction so people who constantly want something from you will not drain you. People can drain you by continuously asking you to give and give and give, perhaps without the slightest concern for the personal toll it takes on you. Be prepared to set boundaries on how far, how much, and how long you are going to pour into others. You may think as I did, "Oh, I have to do it. They love me." But actually, they love your gift and how that gift serves their purposes. The gift doesn't shine if the giver is extinguished. Decide to step into your destiny by determining not only where you will share your gifts, but also where you are going to be all in, investing yourself and your service. If you spend yourself and your service where your service alone would be enough, you are not as energized to perform on the level you need to move closer into your destiny. You will have wasted the grace you have been given on assignments that aren't in alignment with where you are destined to go. I learned that in order to move the Richter scale of your success toward destiny, you have to be fully invested, and you can't be fully invested in everything and everyone you meet. There's simply not enough of you to go around. Destiny always pays its bills. There are seasons in life when, in order to reach destiny, you may have to donate both your service and yourself. When those seasons arise, be sure that it is a step on the road to destiny, because ultimately destiny will always pay its bills. It will always pay you back. I remember how my mother helped me as a young man buy books and ministry materials. I was taking classes and courses, preaching and teaching and being taught. One of our relatives chastened my mother for helping me. She said, "Don't spend all your money backing that boy." I'm sure my aunt meant well and was only trying to protect my mother. What she didn't understand is that destiny always pays its bills. Understand the value of your efforts and be fully prepared to sow before you harvest, to give before you receive. Give the seed of your time, your energy, and even yourself, but do not try to grow a garden on concrete. Destiny always pays you back, but every deal that's offered to you, every request from you, and every need that comes across your desk may not be a seed planted in the garden of destiny. Instead, many are thrust upon the cold concrete of endless demands from people who only take. Decide how and where to invest in you. There are times when you should do something for nothing. Yes, by all means, be generous, but be smart. Balance the call to give with the understanding that the gifts God has given you are worth something. Pay your dues on the way to destiny, but somewhere along the way, destiny begins to pay you back dividends. That's why you have to determine who and what deserves you. With every opportunity, gauge how you can maximize your exposure. An invitation to sing at a benefit concert could be the gig that puts you before a record label executive or an artist recruitment scout. Writing free for a local paper should help you accumulate some bylines to build a portfolio and get paying assignments. Don't simply share your gifts because you believe people will love you for it. Your gifts are worthy of recognition, worthy of remuneration, worthy of advancement. Remember, the consumer never sets a price on the product. I'm not talking about giving up personal fulfillment and purpose. I'm talking about people who pull on you over and over again, suck up your time and energy, and do not give you room to grow. Just because you share yourself in the same place continuously doesn't mean it's a dead end. If preparing income tax forms for a beloved nonprofit organization is a fulfillment of destiny, by all means, do that until you drop. If volunteering your services to the Children's Hospital is how you choose to give back, that's great too. Be generous until your generosity comes at the expense of your destiny. Remember, destiny always pays its bills and gives you returns. Destiny is worth fighting for. The things that are most important in life often do not come without challenge or struggle. Nobody likes to lose, but that doesn't mean every conflict or struggle you encounter in life is worth the fight. When we see something slipping away from our grasp, our instinct is to go into fight mode to protect and preserve what belongs to us. A threat to our career means a fight. A threat to our home means a fight. A threat to our marriage or our health means it's time to fight. The willingness and readiness to fight off a threat is a healthy trait, but some situations simply are not worth a fight. Sometimes a pink slip on the job is the best thing that could happen to boost your career advancement in another setting. Rejection from a lover may pull the plug on a relationship that's been on life support for too many years. The repossession of the car you couldn't afford may be your ticket to economic freedom and redemption. At first, these kinds of situations can stir you into fight mode, but fighting for something that is inconsequential in the grand scheme of your destiny can hold you back from attaining what you really desire. On a deeper spiritual level, survival may actually mean letting go of what's been holding you back. Very often, knowing whether it's time to fight or let go is a matter of putting your ego in check and out of the way. Let's say you find out a guy named Rick is pursuing your girlfriend, the woman you've given 400 different excuses as to why you two are not ready to marry. But now that another man is trying to move in on your relationship, you're ready to fight. Maybe Rick is the best thing for you and for your girlfriend. Maybe Rick wants to marry her and give her the kind of relationship she desires. Maybe it's time for you to get your ego out of the way and move on to your destiny. Have you ever been embroiled in a fight and later realized that it was all about ego? How dare they terminate me? Who is he to break up with me? They can't talk to me like that and get away with it. Ego fights are often ugly, vicious, and unreasonable. But when you fight for a true cause, like your destiny, you make reasonable and sound decisions because it's not really about you. It's about your call to serve humanity. Conversely, when your fight is about ego, you can make all kinds of stupid, irrational decisions because the ego tells you that's the only thing that is important to you. Sometimes we fight the wrong battle because of displaced anger. You can't fight with your boss at work, so you come home and fight with your spouse or your children. You can't fight with your spouse, so you take it out on your church members and fight about meaningless, trivial matters. You can't fight the health condition or the financial downturn, so you fight with the salesperson who won't argue back. Some fights you get sucked into are really other people's struggles. People who are afraid of fighting for themselves can be masters at manipulating others into fighting for them. Before you get ready to do battle, make sure you're fighting your own battles for your own meaningful and worthwhile purpose. Time is a precious commodity, and it must be used carefully and judiciously. Your time is worth everything. Time is your greatest weapon, so choose the situations and circumstances that are worth fighting for. Don't waste your time fighting meaningless battles. Meaningless combat won't help your future. Invest your time where it matters. On the way to destiny, know that there will be battles to fight. Know that what you're fighting for is worth it. Your children, your marriage, your career are always worth fighting for. But even then, you may come to a point when you have to give up and act a fight and just let God fight the battle for you. Focus will sustain your passion. The walk toward destiny is a trek of endurance. Every day is not exciting, even when you are doing what you love. Working toward your destiny is a daily endeavor, but every moment will not be filled with thrills or even challenge. Some days are just clocking hours of work. But when you know why you're working, why you're sacrificing, or why you're delaying gratification, you can sustain your passion for where you are going, especially when your goal seems lodged in a stratosphere you will never reach. Destiny is a long-distance race where endurance is the key to winning. On the journey, we get weak in body and in mind sometimes. We get sick and tired. We get sick and tired of being sick and tired. We grow weary from a tiredness that often is not physical. Sometimes we get emotionally, mentally, or spiritually weary. Circumstances we thought would have been resolved years before may continue to haunt us. Sometimes we feel like we don't have anything else to give, even to destiny. We've given all that we have, and we ask ourselves, what more do our children want? What more does my spouse want from me? What more does my employer expect of me? Meanwhile, life goes on, leaving us feeling both overwhelmed and underwhelmed. Overwhelmed by mounting pressures because life and livelihood have to be maintained, underwhelmed because nothing seems to be changing for the better. Destiny is a distant place that seems unreachable. It takes determination to continue operating in the day-to-day while keeping a healthy focus on destiny. Help yourself and develop connections with people who are already at or near the place you want to be. Learn from them because being around them can help you stay focused on why you're making sacrifices and enduring struggles. People who love what they do and are successful at it tend to enjoy establishing relationships with serious mentees. They love to share stories of their setbacks and successes, their trials and triumphs. They want to encourage a protege to keep getting better at the gift. Mentors can often advise you regarding actions that may not be a productive payoff. They may be able to help you recognize a dead-end employment situation or tell when it's time to let a business relationship go. Sometimes the best hello to a new opportunity is the goodbye you gave to a dead situation. You'll win if you don't quit. I learned that quitters don't win. When I face formidable circumstances and complex dilemmas, more than a few times I felt my faith give way and my heart become faint. I remember trying to get a loan for a piece of property for our church in West Virginia. It seemed that at every turn I ran into an obstacle. I had applied at different banks. Some said no, others required 40% down, which was still a no because I didn't have it. I carried the cross of their rejection silently. I didn't want the church to know that our dream was my nightmare. I reasoned the church could stay where it was. Even though the space was too small, I sometimes wondered if it would be better to let go of the pain of wanting and settle for the calm mediocrity of the status quo. But after every rejection, my passion would revitalize and I would try again. Whether I was secretly masochistic or had faith, I wasn't sure. I was not certain I had the right approach or the right business acumen, but unbeknownst to me, I was attaining my business acumen through the rejection process. The pain of the process ultimately empowered me to acquire the property. Yes, I did get the loan and we purchased the building, but the greater gift was the experience. I learned to persevere even in the tempestuous, arduous, agonizing becoming stage. The West African Ashanti people say, if you understand the beginning well, the end will not trouble you. When you are sure that you are aimed toward destiny, you will not worry about the end. Instead, dig in your heels and hold on for the ride with all of its highs and lows. Admittedly, tough times can make you want to run for the nearest exit. Keep in mind that those who figure out how to slide their way past difficulties do not meet their God-appointed destiny. Destiny belongs to those who demand it by their faithful and dogged determination to hang in there until they achieve what they desire. Tyler Perry, famed playwright, director, actor, and producer, made his own way to Hollywood filmmaking, a circuitous route that would have caused many to give up. During his early years of positioning himself toward destiny, the road was neither smooth nor accommodating to this young black man from New Orleans, 7th Ward. In the toughest times, Tyler fought the fights that were worth pursuing and let go of the fights that were counterproductive to destiny. Starting at age 22, Tyler wrote, directed, and produced many stage plays that were financed with his personal savings. For more performances than he could count, only a handful of people showed up. This went on for years. He continued to save and invest his own money to produce the plays, but nothing seemed to take off. Even when the cast performed to a nearly empty house, Tyler never let go of his dream. He battled all obstacles to produce another play, even when no one had come to the previous one. Later, after some success with his plays, he stayed in the fight when Hollywood executives told him ridiculously they couldn't back his movie because black people don't go to the movies. He held on and refused to let go of his dream to write, direct, and produce plays and movies. As Tyler fought for his place among filmmakers, he chose to let go of the fights that were counterproductive to destiny. He could have spent his life fighting a father who ridiculed him. He could have engaged in a lifelong emotional battle against the people who sexually abused him. Instead, he invested his warrior spirit in fights that were worth the effort to get his plays and films to audiences.